is Austin welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, March 4th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Gary and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together, they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on the air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLresearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Is everybody with us and ready to go?
We sure are.
All right. Do we want to say a few words real quick about our upcoming events, maybe?
That would be a great idea, Austin. Why don't you just plunge right in?
All right. The first one we've got coming up is the Art of Healing Circle Retreat. Designed by our good friend Beatriz Gonzalez, which will be in March this month, the 21st to the 23rd, here in Louisville. Beatriz has developed a healing technique, which includes the Law of One. She's been on a healing path for 30 or so years, and she recently discovered the Law of One, found it was very compatible with her understanding, and integrated it. And so the whole weekend will be dedicated to her sharing her understanding of healing and then walking everybody through her healing technique. So it is informative as well as transformative. The next workshop we have is an archetypes workshop on April 11th through the 13th, which will be in Perryville, Kentucky, at our good friend's farm property. It's a beautiful place. That is going to be guided by our friend Safira Vox, who is a career philosopher who spent the past few years studying the archetypes, as discussed in Book 4 of the Law of One material, hoping to formulate a way to make it more understandable, and he will be guiding a discussion and an investigation into the archetypes. So we can go ahead and jump into our opening riff here. This quote comes from Kuo from February 8, 1986. You must turn from the outside manifestations that meet your senses. Turn from your own opinion of yourself, your own judgment of the fruits of your spiritual labors, any and all prophecy having to do with your probable future, and instead join the great darkness of the sea of mystery which surrounds and expresses the gateway to spiritual progress. You cannot see or hear or feel or taste or smell anything in the darkness. You are, shall we say, without, as you progress upon a path that is narrow because it is only the span of footsteps. There are no things to carry. Why do you think the spiritual path is so narrow? If it needed to be wider, it would be. It is your metaphysical feet touching the very stuff of spiritual reality that walk the path of the seeker. There is no luggage, there is no rest, and there is no turning back. And so you walk on in darkness.
Thank you, Austin. I have a good friend who focuses a large part of his attention on who he was in past lifetimes, identifying himself with respect to these lifetimes. He had a lifetime as one of the founders of our country. Of course, these were all very important men. He had a lifetime as a founder of the Mormon Church. He had a lifetime as an Egyptian pharaoh that brought the Law of One to Egypt. And he had a lifetime as either Enki or Enlil. He's never quite sure which. But that's back in the Sumerian times that have only just recently been uncovered in terms of writing about them in tablet form. What harm does it do him to spend his time back in past lifetimes? I would say it's a tremendous distraction. He has tremendous potential, which he has never begun to explore, metaphysically speaking, because he's satisfied to identify himself. Total of these past lifetimes. And it drives him crazy that I neither know any of my past lifetimes, nor am I interested in finding out. If there's one thing I've heard more than any other, it's the refrain, "But who were you back in the days of Egypt? Where do you fit in?" Encourage him to consider that there's plenty in this lifetime to give us catalyst enough to fill our days. There are all kinds of things to think about, tension to the passage of time, relationships in the here and now with the people that make up his life now. Value his friendship, and I tread lightly where his fixation is concerned, because after all, it is his choice, not mine. And yet, in a way, I mourn the man he could be if he fell back into the silence and did not attempt to explain. Explain yourself. Would you even really want to try? I don't mean in terms of, well, this is why I did that, and this is why I got this stuff together for supper, and this is why I decided to have a party next Saturday. I don't mean that. I mean, metaphysically speaking, can you begin to know yourself? I, for one, certainly cannot. I do the very best I can with what I've got, as far as I understand my mission. I'm after it like a dog after a bone. I've dedicated my life to LNL research and to its work. Never even been tempted to look elsewhere. I am utterly fascinated by the enigma of my life. How unusual it is and how peculiar. I could not begin to explain it. I can only respond to that which is felt. And I don't mean seen or heard or touched. I mean felt from within that house of prayer that is my heart. Recently tried a an interesting hour in a sort of a tub where you got all sensation. You're floating. You have no sensation of up or down. You can't see. It's total darkness. There's nothing to hear. And so for an hour, you are given the spiritual path and nothing else. More so than when you sit down to meditate, because you can hear the cars on the road or bird song in the trees or the wind, the train whistling by. He did not report any unusual experiences. Of course, it was his first hour. Who knows what might happen in a continuing regimen of that discipline. It would certainly be a help. A shortcut, shall we say. Can you give up your opinion of yourself? Can you give up your judgment of yourself? To know. And instead simply turn to what the Kuo group calls the great darkness of the sea of mystery, which surrounds and expresses the gateway to spiritual progress. To use this incarnation to its fullest, we want to do two completely paradoxical things. We want to make fullest use of all of our senses and go after those things that we want until we've gotten time. We want to give ourselves time in the mystery, in the darkness, where there is no luggage, there is no rest. And there is no turning back. Great awakening. Perhaps many of you have, and perhaps some of it has come from your study of our work since you're listening to our program. I hope so. I hope it's been helpful to you. I want you to know that we four humble and foolish humans love you with all of our hearts. And anything that you need, please write us and let us know. If it's within our ability to discuss it, if it has something to do with the spiritual walk, that's what we're here for. write us and let us know what you're thinking, what you hope to know, what you seek. Above all, beloved, join us in the silence as we tuned for this hour of love shared with you. We grew closer and closer in that silence until we four were as one. Join us. Jim and I meditate every night for a few minutes at 9 Eastern Standard Time. There is a great company of those who meditate any hour of the day or night. Join us. You will never be alone in the silence, for it is full of love. Amen.
Thank you so much, Carla. Well, it looks like we have a live caller looking to ask a caller from area code 801. You are live on the air. Who are we talking to?
You're talking to JP from Utah.
Hi, JP from Utah. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Happy New Year's to everybody. I have a question that's been kind of bugging me. I'm just a curious. I want to know about everything, every little detail. In the books, in the raw books, in the blue books, on the bottom of all the books, there are these four cartouches. And I'm kind of a Egyptologist guy, and I've been studying cartouches, and I have quite a library, photos of the ones inside the Great Pyramid and blah, blah, blah. But these four, I haven't ever seen these exact four, has the beetle and a few of these other symbols and the bird and the suns. And I was wondering, if it's not personal or private or secret, could somebody explain to me why these four are on the bottom of all the books? I think there's got to be something significant about it. I don't think they're just random things. I think they're there for a reason. And if you can share that, I would really appreciate it.
Jim, I think you're up. The question was, what are those four cartouches and what are their significance?
The first one is the first name that was chosen by, forgetting his name now.
Akhenaten?
Yeah. And the second one is the choice he made after he decided that the first one did not sufficiently reflect the one creator. The third one is his brother, Smenkhara, and the fourth one is Nefertiti, his wife.
Okay.
In truth, they have no true significance because the publisher was just bugging us for something to put on the cover. And Jim found these cartouches that were in the family, so to speak. Thought, well, all right. And he sent them off, and they became part of the L&L lore. But other than that, there's no real energy behind them or feeling that there's something special about these names.
Okay.
I've got a quote from Ra talking about this particular individual that it's sort of based around, Aten. I can go ahead and read that, give a little more background into why they might be significant.
Go right ahead.
Ra says in Session 2, in the 18th Dynasty, as it is known in your records of space-time distortions, we were able to contact a pharaoh, as you would call him. The man was small in his life experience on your plane and was a, what this instrument would call, wanderer. Thus, this mind-body-spirit complex received our communication distortions and was able to blend his distortions with our own. this young entity had been given a vibratory complex of which vibrated honor of a prosperous god. And this mind-body complex, which we call convenience, would call Amon. The entity decided that this name, being in honor of one among many gods, was not acceptable for inclusion in his vibratory sound complex. Thus, he changed his name to one which honored the sun disk. This distortion, called Aten, which was the second cartouche, was a close distortion of our reality as we understand our own nature of mind-body-spirit complex distortions. However, it does not come totally into alignment with the intended teach learning which was sent. The entity, Ikhnaten, became convinced that the vibration of the One was the true spiritual vibration and thus decreed the Law of One. So that's referring to the individual Ikhnaten in the first cartouche, and all the other cartouches are sort of based on that. Does that answer your question, JP?
Yes, it does. It satisfies me. I was hoping there was something magical about them, but anyway, thanks a lot.
Certainly not. Well, thank you for your question, and thanks for calling in. We can get to our pre-sent-in questions. We have one from Curtis O., who submitted from the Law of One Raw Material Study Group on Facebook. Curtis asks, in respect with the light, Ra has said that love is the great activator. What is the difference between personal love and activating love? And this is a great question. Who'd like to take a first stab at it?
I could set up whoever responds next by reading the excerpt, the particular Q&A to which Curtis refers in the Law of One is 27.13. The questioner asks, is there a manifestation of love that we would call vibration? I am Ra. Again, we reach semantic difficulties. The vibration or density of love or understanding is not a term used in the same sense as the second distortion love. The distortion love being the great activator and primal co-creator of various creations using intelligent infinity. The vibration love being that density in which those who have learned to do an activity called loving without significant distortion then seek the ways of light or wisdom. Thus, in the vibratory sense, love comes into light in the sense of the activity of unity in its free will. Love uses light and has the power to direct light in its distortions. Thus, vibratory complexes recapitulate in reverse the creation in its unity, thus showing the rhythm or flow of the great heartbeat, if you will use this analogy.
And you can study that paragraph for the next 2 hours.
Right.
2 years or 2 lifetimes, probably.
Yeah. To make it really simple, when we say I love you, unless we have a tremendous amount of purity in our nature, we are expressing more of a sentiment than a true emotion. We haven't refined that love. Jim and I have been married for over 25 years now, and I think we have begun to refine that vibration called love. And it is truly jewel-like in its manifestation in our lives. It's absolutely beautiful. So far beyond words that I would be unable to make any useful comment on how I feel about my beautiful husband. To say that I love him is so weak. We say that we love music. We say that we love the Beatles. We say that we love McDonald's burgers. You know, we use love so carelessly that it's almost meaningless. And yet love is the great activator. When you consider that it is only the second distortion after free will. Creator decided to know itself. That was the first distortion, free will. It used its free will to decide to know itself. And when it probed into the awareness of itself, it discovered that it was made of love. That made it the second distortion. Ordering distortion, and orders from the top down. In Session 28, Ross says, it is necessary to consider the enabling function of the focus known as love. The energy is of an ordering nature. It orders in a cumulative way from greater to lesser, so that when its universe, as you call it, is complete, the manner of development of each detail is inherent in the living light, and thus will develop in such and such a way. Your own universe, having been well studied in an empirical fashion by those you call your scientists, and having been understood or visualized, shall we say, with greater accuracy by the understandings or visualizations of the one known as Dewey Larson, whose reciprocal system of physics Ra and Don talk about in the book quite a bit. It's amazing how that system of physics fits into the system of distortions that include love and light. Love is the nature of all that there is, because it is the nature of the Creator, and the Creator is all that there is. But if you want to manifest something with this love, it takes light. Love uses light patterns requested to. It is different in every density. Our density is the last physical density, and so it is the last space-time density in terms of Dewey Larson's physics. After this density, we start going into time-space, or the inner planes. Won't it be great to get beyond the physical and begin exploring the nature of the metaphysical? That which is thought. Of course, we're all thoughts, but in the very first session. And in that dance is the dance of creation. So if you can wrap your mind around the fact that you're a spiritual, shall we say, reality, showing forth as a physical illusion, rather than a physical reality which has a spiritual illusion, you can begin to understand the nature of yourself and all of us. We are vibrations. We are thoughts. We are energy. Moving past light, we move into the various vibrations of love. And there are so many vibrations of love. But they don't have the same meaning as a word, as that love which is the second
distortion.
Thank you. Couldn't come up with the word. Leave some respect for the distortion of love when you use the word normal sense, its earthly sense. remember that there is a deeper, higher, wider sense in which love is all that there is. You and I are mirrors to each other and teachers to each other because we are all love. And so when someone impresses you either positively or negatively, take a look at that, because you're looking at yourself in the mirror. It's especially important when somebody really bugs you. Why does that catch your attention and not something else? Well, it's because there's something, some source of pain buried in your past, in this incarnation. That is calling to you. Take a look at me, your mirror. Where have you seen me before? Come and recover me from the shadow side and bring me into the light. Coordinated living self. The more we can bring of those shadow energies into the light and ask them to work for us in the light, the more them that we seek so much, we will begin to have. So pay attention to the people around you and how they feel to you, how you react to them. It's wonderful to love people. It's wonderful to think highly of people. That means that there is some way in which you think highly of yourself, looking at your strengths when you look at your heroes. You have that too. But when something catches you negatively, take a look in your own past and find a place that's buried, that's full of pain. And dig it up, you know. Shake off the dirt. Bring it up into the light. And see what you can learn about yourself. Use I know of the smaller love. And as for the larger usage of that, we simply need to keep focusing into that till we really can feel the unity between ourselves and other people at the soul level. If you can look at someone and see that person at the soul level, oh, you have done such a wonderful thing for yourself and for that person. And he will feel the love pours from you to him. It will do him a world of good. I didn't mean to take up everybody's time. I tend to get carried away here, folks.
That was excellent, though. Jim, do you have anything to offer?
No, not on that. She did a great job.
How about you, Gary? Do you have anything else?
Yeah.
All right. Go for it.
Go, yeah.
In considering the difference between personal love, as Curtis said, and love as the great activator, which is Ra's terms for love, I see personal love as being born of circumstance. It seems to be a special bond with and affection for a particular object. Perhaps that object is a person, a place, or an animal, a memory, a thing, or pancakes. Who cannot love pancakes? Whatever it may be, in personal love, there seems to be a special relationship between the subject, the person in this case, and the object, that which is loved, embraced, accepted, upheld, cherished, etc. This love at this level, as I understand it, begins to melt the illusion of separation. And in that melting, judgment begins to disappear, and a sense of connection and underlying unity between subject and object begin to appear. Then as that vibration or personal love grows so that it includes more and more other selves and more of the self and more of the creation, then it approaches maximum activation of Green Ray, the center of universal and unconditional love. And the more pure that is, the less distorted it is, the more it approaches either the true vibration of fourth density or a third density approximation of that fourth density vibration. I'm not precisely sure how to formulate that one. But then on the level of the great activator, as Curtis asked, Carla covered some great ground here. So I would just add that Ra calls this the second distortion, the great activator, the logos, love. They call it the creative principle. So as Carla was already saying, that creative principle uses free will and in its own intelligence creates the universe. It uses intelligent energy to form light, the third primal distortion, which is, I guess you could say, the material of the universe. The outer form, that which is tangible about the universe. So the point that I take away about one of the distinctions between the two is that seeing love on that level as the great activator is to see that it is that it pervades everything. The entire universe that you can imagine, the entire universe that you can experience, was all created from love. So no matter what planet you're on or what density you're in or what incarnation you're experiencing or no matter what layer of the dream that you are residing in, all of that, love underlies all of that. It is the substance or the essence or the great activator of that which you're experiencing. And it can't abhor anything. It can't reject anything. It can't... I'm getting tongue-tied with my words here because it's a really difficult concept, and I'm... barely understand it intellectually, at least myself. But in terms of an all-pervasive love that can't reject anything or can't abhor anything, the analogy that I refer to that I picked up in my own studies is that of the mirror, because it helps convey in a really deep way how one thing cannot reject another. For instance, the mirror cannot reject the image, its images, that which passes in front of it. It's automatically there, automatically accepted, so to speak, and is one with the mirror. And to further kind of dig into that idea of the all-pervasive nature of this, of the second distortion, I would also note that it can't be, that it can be used by either polarity. Such is its unconditionality and universality and everywhere-ness, that even those of the negative path, even those who would intentionally manipulate, control, and abuse other selves and seek to reinforce an illusion, to reinforce separation, even those of that polarity can call on this love because it's that which created everything. It's in everything. And I will conclude my rambling at that point.
Thanks.
That was great.
I certainly don't have anything to offer on top of that, what has been said, because like Gary, I think my intellect can barely grasp this idea. Just something I find interesting to reiterate is the idea that there is a connection between the big love and the little love, because as Ross says, the vibratory complexes recapitulate and reverse the creation in its unity, thus showing the rhythm or flow of the great heartbeat. So there is something of that big love within the little love, because we are walking the same steps back towards the Creator that the Creator took to create us, basically. So there's a connection, but I don't know if I could really grasp it. So let's move on to our next question.
Well, wait a minute. We haven't really heard from Mickey yet, and I'm always interested in what he has to say.
I already passed. I agree with what you said, Sweet, that the activating love was the love of the creation, intelligent energy. And personal love is what we feel for each other.
Okay. Well, do you think that we can ever move from personal love to unconditional love?
Rarely in this illusion. I think, it's one of those goals that's possible.
Do you feel that we personally have come close to doing that?
Well, yeah. Yeah, we're closer than I ever imagined I would be.
Yeah. Me too.
Universal love, I see as, I suppose as the entity evolves, it learns to love. At the same time, I see love as a function of awareness, revealed awareness, revelation, tapping, becoming aware of that which is, and then unconditional love sort of results. Do you, Carla, or anybody else see any merit in that idea?
I do, yes. I'm not sure what to do with it.
Yeah, it just sparked in my mind. I don't know that it would start a fire.
It makes sense to me. Well, I hope, Curtis, that we at least gave you something to think about. Definitely not a question that has a flat-out answer. The next question is pretty simple, coming from Todd F. from the Law of One Raw Material Study Group on Facebook as well. Todd wants to know if the transcripts will continue past 2011. It's referring to the channeling transcripts.
We are hopeful. It depends on Carla's ability to get healed enough that she doesn't have to use pain medications on a daily basis and could have a better chance of being able to channel without going down into the sleep that pain medication tends to put you into. So we're hopeful.
Yeah, the channeling stopped back in 2011, so there's nothing in between then and now. So we are hoping to get weekly meditation started again, and if that works out, we're hoping that that will lead to further channeling. Did you want to say anything about that, Carla?
Yeah, I just wanted to explain, Curtis, what happened was that my back sort of fell apart, and I became informed by the doctors that I was going to have a not just one, but it turned out to be three different operations on my back, on my spine. And the last one, the operation took place in 2010, but it never healed. And I have been attempting to heal up this hole in my back since that time. It's the longest running difficulty I think I can ever remember having in terms of a surgical problem, as opposed to just fighting with the effects of rheumatoid arthritis and so forth, which can be tough, but it's a different type of tough. The hole in my back is getting smaller for the first time in 2.5 years. Knock wood. And thank the angels and all of the healing prayer that has been coming my way from so many sources for so long. I give credit to all those sources and to my own prayers, certainly. But at last, that hole is getting visibly smaller, visibly shallower. Things are looking good, aren't they, Mick?
Yes.
And we're greatly hoping that as the future of this year goes forward, that this will continue to occur, more and more ready to get going.
Austin and I as well hope to learn the art of channeling from Carla. And, you know, we're not sure when and how that circumstance will present itself, and then if it does, if how well we will do, but the hope is there, the intention is there.
We're going to do our best. We don't know what the results will be, but we do hope to maybe continue on with that art if it is appropriate for LL Research.
Oh, I think it's very appropriate, and I already have two wonderful students that could carry on in my absence.
Steve Timon.
Steve Timon. Both of them are perfectly capable of carrying on with the channeling. Jim is here, but always reluctant. Steve is very, very eager to help, but he is some 4 hours from here. So in order for him to join a meditation, he has to drive for 4 hours one way and then 4 hours the other, just to get here and then just to get back home. It's a pretty tough regimen for him, and he can't do it all the time, obviously, although he'd really, really love to. So that's the deal. I was taught by Don. He was taught by Hal Price. Hal Price was taught by Walt Rogers. You know, you can trace it back in terms of being able to teach this art. But the problem is there needs to be an activating spark, and it's difficult to give someone that. It has to happen sort of on its own. For some, pretty naturally, they trust me, and they do what I tell them, and pretty much immediately they're channeling, and then it's just a matter of refining that skill. Jim has been the one that's the closest to being able to offer that because of being physically present in my life. And for many years, Jim shared the channeling with me. He would take the channeling at the end of the meeting, where we had quite a few questions to answer and not very much time. And I am not known for my shortness or brevity of speech. So thank God for Jim, because he was able to give that particular talent. He's terse all the time. That's just the way he is. He's one of those cowboy types that does yep, nope, maybe, pretty much. And you have to really poke him with a stick to get him to do more than that. But
is that why there's a stick next year, Bed?
when he does go ahead and have something to say, what he has to say is really worth listening to. That's the point. So hopefully, with the record of having already taught this to others like Jim and Steve Timon, and with people really wanting to learn, it's totally, you know, unknown as to whether or not they will be able to, but they're certainly going to give it their best shot.
I would also like to point out that there are 1,300 plus, going up to probably more than 1,500 transcripts on our archive website right now. So there's been a lot of ground covered, plenty of reading material. If you're looking for something with a particular topic, we don't have the best organized system for those transcripts right now, but we are in the midst of our website unification project, which will bring up a new content management system for those transcripts, which will hopefully allow us to organize them by topic and will help seekers find transcripts that are more relevant to something they're searching for. So in the meantime, before any new transcripts arrive, there will be some changes to the existing transcripts that will make them easier to read. Is there anything more we wanted to say about that?
Just that Fox has done a wonderful job of choosing a quote for each day on the home page of Bring Forth. And so if you want to take a look at that quote and see if you're interested in opening up the full session, because that full session is ready to give you a much fuller way of looking at that at whatever that quote of the day was. And I just love those quotes of the day. I always take a look at what she's picked out, because I think it's just fascinating what she can find. She's really so creative and so able to say, okay, here, take a look at this. What do you think? You know, it's a wonderful ability, and I love sharing in it.
We owe her a huge deal of gratitude for that, because those quotes are very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're coming up near the end of the show now. I'll just give one more mention to our upcoming workshops. We have the Art of Healing Circle Retreat this month, March 21st to the 23rd, and the Archetypes Workshop, April 11th through the 13th. You can find more information about either of those on our Bring Forth homepage, just to the recent news section, and there are links for both of those under the news section. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we will talk to you then.
And we love you all.
I lay alone in Allen Coast, only so that I see your ghost. I run through wooded aisle and chase the sunlight miles. stare at a bright red sun. Search all day and never find anyone.
Planets turn and the old sun.